I know there are a few faces I know, my niece, Sabina, and of course, Danielle and Rivki. Rivki someplace around here? Okay, now, this is not a surprise. It's really a pleasure to be here, particularly when Danielle called me up to come and speak with this initialist. I just said something.
Okay. I was afraid walking, so I'm
totally
embarrassed.
Yehuda, it was really, really, it's a comfort for me to be here, to hear a lot about Waterbury. Never have been here, but it's really a pleasure and a special nachas to see alumni who are establishing a community like we once tried to do in Silver Spring, and it's really a special pleasure. And particularly to talk about parenting issues. Yeah, one time, I remember when I was living in Philadelphia and our shul appointed a new rav, and we took somebody really straight out of the Beis Medrash from Lakewood, and at his installation, could imagine what a fancy installation it was. It was the Moab Malkin, Val Yisvei, Zolazan Yizunt was there, and he said that he had a lot of hanor coming to the installation, because usually a shul is makbet to take a rov with experience, and experience means somebody had made mistakes already someplace else, and you take him with a tefila that he shouldn't make the same mistakes by you. And here you had the courage to take somebody straight out of the Beis Medrash who hasn't had a chance to make the mistakes he'll ultimately make yet. And it was something that always stuck in my mind, and when Daniela called and we talked about different topics, so I said, what about the one that I just gave that was very well received, was 10 ways to help your children deal with peer pressure. So she thought about it, called me back the next day, said, Rabbi Katz, another. Peer pressure is only, you know, maybe only teenagers, you know, but how this is not a very old community, as I could see. But I said I think you'll be able to adapt it, and surely during those dark moments with your teenagers, which will ultimately happen, you'll hopefully remember it. So I was very pleased to hear that they're taped, not that I'm listed for eternity, but that somebody could listen to maybe a few years from now and see how all of these principles are really a davar hashav l'chol nefesh. A fascinating pasuk in Hosea. It's fascinating. The pasuk says, "Ef kishem kedayv shakol," I will meet them kedayv shakol, like a bear, the school of the Galmudo, like a bear that has lost its children. The ekras karlibam, and I will tear their closed hearts. And really, the Radak says, "Kiaf." I'll quote the Radak. He says, "Af sheyesh harbichay is tarfus yesim midayv." Why does the pasuk use a bear to be the muscle, the metaphor? The harbichay is venisus beris. There are many chayas that kill with a poison, with a venom. So why does the Navi choose a bear? What does it mean, a bear that is without, whose children were bereft of its children? Not a lion or a leopard. When a bear gives birth, it gives birth, the vlad, the child, is complete, the cup is completely covered in a thick membrane. And v'adoy m'lachechetz ha'shalya, v'chaytechetz ma'akidei sh'loitazik v'vlad. What the bear does is it licks this membrane, and it tears it little by little so that it shouldn't wound the child.
So
So until all of this covering, this meaty covering, this membrane is removed, it works at it until the cut comes out. And says the Radakal, Lefisha Tarcha Harbe, because she worked at it so diligently, Himaris Nefesh Yeser Kashia Hargo Yeser. When her child is taken away, her bitterness, the Maris Nefesh that she has, is even more significant. So he said, so one would extrapolate from that, that the most dangerous animal, and the most dangerous creature, is a bear that has lost it, that's bereft of its child. Because the Yigia, the tremendous work that the bear puts in to bring this child, Elapoyal, to actualize this child, the tremendous Yigia that the bear puts in creates a tremendous iskashrus, a tremendous bond, a tremendous connection between the child and the child's mother. And when we talk about being mechanech, the younger generation, and one has to understand that the kesher that's created by the mother's work with the child is something that is the greater the idea, the greater the work that's put into the child, the greater the kesher. And sometimes we have the idea that the children that were really on autopilot in a certain sense, that we have children and we just have to stand and stay out of the way, we tend to think that those are the children that the outsiders think, that those are the children that parents love the most. And while we would love to think that there, we don't divide love and it's all the same, there is a special relationship that's made with a child that struggles and a parent. There is probably no greater struggle that a child has than dealing with peer pressure. And peer pressure is a powerful reality. We tend to think that it really begins when kids are teenagers. It begins when kids are 2 years old. As soon as they can start talking, it begins. Now, I'm not gonna play with you if you don't X, Y, or Z. That's peer pressure. And peer pressure, we always think, and much to the chagrin of parents, but a rite of passage of life, it's natural and healthy for children to rely more on their friends as they get older. We would love to think that they always rely on us, and I'll get back to that in a minute, or a few minutes. But as children mature, they rely, it's natural and healthy for them to rely on their friends. And sometimes peer pressure can be good. Chazal say, kinasay from Tarba Chochma. That's peer pressure, kinasay from the child. One child, the competition that exists, which creates a certain level of pressure, of peer pressure, is a good thing. And sometimes it's harmless. It's really benign. It doesn't, depending on what it is, it doesn't do, it's not positive or negative, but sometimes, unfortunately, it's negative. It can cause kids to do poorly in school. Just in general, school comportment, but surely it can you know, socially in school, socially with their friends. And as children get older, the stakes of peer pressure raise much more significantly. And we know how true it is with us as adults, that we have to, the difficulty for us as adults in dealing with peer pressure. And sometimes peer pressure, it's more important for children to be accepted by their friends than to be accepted by their parents. And we'll talk a little bit about if that's really true, but at least on the surface, it seems very, very true. And a necessary step in becoming an adult is for a child to find a place where they belong outside of their family. And children experiment as they search for ways to belong and understand that the most difficult times and the times that kids are most susceptible to it are the first of everything. The first day at school, the first day of little kids, the first day of school, and the first day of first grade, and the first day of whatever, middle school, and the first day of high school, and the first day of seminary, beyond. Kids become susceptible to it. And children try on behaviors, just like you would. And how we react to the behavior is what we're going to talk about tonight, is the things that we could do to somehow, and some of them are dvarim pshutim, but sometimes dvarim pshutim are the most overlooked things. And there are, I want to present 10 steps in helping parents help their children deal with peer pressure. And not only that, but even turn it into positive influence in their lives. One of the most abused words of this generation is self-confidence. Because we have a tremendous, every time our kids have any type of problem, we tend to think that we did something to destroy their confidence. And we don't know that we did, we don't know that we didn't. But the reality is that children who feel good about themselves are less likely to give in to pressure from other people. It's a yesod, it's a guarantee. So the first thing that a parent has to do to try to have this looming specter of peer pressure contained is to help your child develop self-confidence. We do it in a few ways, and they're not difficult ways, and the ways start right now when your children are young. Ask your children for their opinion. When parents show children that they value their opinions, children's self-confidence grows. And help your child see that they are capable of making their own judgments. One of the things that really increases the danger of negative peer pressure, let's say, is that children who have had all their decisions made for them, children who don't really express their own opinions and never are able to express their own opinions, don't see that they're capable of making their own judgments. And kids who are capable of making their own judgments and are capable of standing up for those judgments and have had the ability to do it within the family framework, coached or facilitated by their parents, are less likely to be blindly swayed by peer pressure. It's Aleph. And the truth of the matter is that sense of connection that a child has with a parent, consistent connection that's positive, it's with warmth, it's kindness, it's love, it's stability. Children are more likely to flourish socially. When you say things like kindness and stability and warmth and love, everybody thinks you're getting all soft and you're automatically going to be a welcome mat as a parent. And because there is this concept of the old school of crushing people, and we crush people and they turned out basically okay. But we crush people and I have to tell you the truth, they really didn't turn out so okay. And there just needs to be this kind of framework. Children who have been raised in such a fashion, and this is the time to raise them. I had an incident recently, and it's not always when there's a negative. I just had an incident recently with a parent who told me every interaction that they have with their daughter is negative. There's no such thing for the last 2 years as a positive interaction that they've had with their daughter. And I said, are they just Is your house like a constant battle zone? Is it just every... No, every time she wants to do something, we don't want her to do something, it just blows out of proportion. She wants to go to 7-Eleven, and we say, no, it's too late at night. We're reasonable people. We would let her go if it wasn't 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, you know. Rabbi Katz, you know how dangerous it is out there? I do know how dangerous it is out there. But it just blows out of proportion. For 4 days, she's not going to talk to us, and then this was a conversation. And I said, how frequently does it happen? So not so frequently, but every time it happens, it doesn't happen frequently because there are long periods of silence. So I said to the parents, I said, do you think your daughter thinks that you love her? She said, so the parents said to me, of course they know it. I said, how convinced are you that they know it? I said, let's call her in. No, let's not call her in. I said, I'm gonna ask her a question later on today, and I'm gonna call you back. And I asked her a question. I said, when's the last time your parents told you that they loved you? I don't think I asked it, but the ones who were in school, they know I asked those questions. Okay, and she said to me, I can't remember. So I called back the father. I said, when's the last time you said it? He says, I haven't said it, but she knows that I give her a bruch every Friday night. I kiss her. I said, when can she tell you that you love her? No, and I have to say something that's so obvious. I said, what happens is, and I told the parents this, during those quiet moments, because Baruch Hashem, in our homes, most of the time, there are more, significantly more quiet moments than semi-explosive moments. And during those quiet moments, I said, is when you put your investment into the bank. And if you take that framework during that time and you create this kindness and sensitivity, and it's interesting. I mean, I haven't heard anything for a couple weeks, but, you know, every time I pass by the person, surely gives me like a nod like this. So I don't know what it means. I don't know if it means he's embarrassed or if it worked. I'm not sure. But I haven't. She's probably getting a lot of slurpees these days. Also, children that have a... you have to understand something. Part of the... psychologically, the way it works, peer pressure is a steamroller. It's a certain level of acceptance. It's a certain level of self-worth. If children have that feeling someplace else, they don't have to stake out their turf on other terms. And relationships with high levels of kindness and devoid of unkind words appear to be very important to healthy development. I will tell you, if somebody... after I gave this lecture, I don't remember where it was. I think it was in Chicago, basically. You know, if you get to my age, things don't come so simple anymore, especially when you had such a run for the money when you were younger. But somebody sent this to me, actually, so I can't tell you where it is, but it sounds like a chicken soup, so I can't tell you if it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or for whatever soul it is, you know, but that's what it sounds like. And it's such a small thing, but it's such a small thing. It's very hard to do. I mean, unless you're really conscious of it, but it's very hard to do. But if you keep it in mind, it makes a huge difference. Yeah, but you could do it. I have no idea. It could be it's not in chicken soup. If there are any chicken soup the key in here, you may know that it is. But it doesn't say anybody. It just sent it to me like this. Very interesting. Peeking out from the corner of my desk is a note slowly yellowing and bent from time. It sounds like chicken soup, no? It is a card from my mother containing only 4 sentences, but with enough impact to change my life forever. In it, she praises my abilities as a writer without qualification. Each sentence is filled with love, offering specific examples of what my pursuit has meant to her and my dad. The word but never appears on the card. However, the word and appears more than a dozen times. Every time I read the card, which is almost every day, I am reminded to ask myself if I am doing the same thing for my daughters. I've asked myself how many times I have butted them and me out of their happiness. Although our eldest daughters usually received all A's on her report card, there was never a semester when at least one teacher wouldn't suggest that she talk too much in class, present company excluded. I always forgot to ask them if she was improving her behavior, if her comments contributed to discussion or encouraged a quieter girl to talk. Instead, I would come home and greet her with, "Great, your dad and I are very proud of your grades, but you could try to tone it down in class." The same is true of our youngest daughter. Like her sister, she is a lovely, bright, articulate child. She also treats the floor of her room and the bathroom as a closet, which has provoked me to say more than once, "That project is great, but clean up your room." But, the fact is, but feels bad and feels good. When it comes to our kids, feeling good is the way to go. When they feel good about themselves and what they're doing, they do more of it, building their confidence and judgment. When all they say, think, or do is qualified or put down in some way, their joy sours and their anger soars. Children need and will respond to their parents' expectations. When these expectations are consistently bright and positive, and are taught, modeled, and expressed, amazing things happen. "I see you made a mistake, and I know you are intelligent enough to figure out what you did wrong and make a better decision next time." Or, "We work hard for our money, and I know you can figure out a way to pay for what you want," rather than saying, "But we can't pay for it," something like that. It's not enough to say we love our children. In the time, the next sentence has some goodness in this. In the time when frustration is fierce, we can't limit love's expression. If we want to tone down the sound of violence in our homes, we're going to have to turn up the volume on noticing, praising, and guiding, and participating in what is right with our children. "No more buts" is a clarion call for joy. It's also a challenge, a fresh opportunity before us each day to put our attention on what's good and promising about our children, and to believe with all our hearts that they will eventually be able to see the same in us with whom they will ultimately live, work, and serve. And if I forever forget, I have my mother's note to remind me. Such a simple thing, it has a lot of application to it. The second thing here, I just want to mention one thing about praise. A lot of people get confused with praise for a simple reason, because most of us hate flattery. And the praise sometimes seems to be, it's flattery. What's the difference between praise and flattery? So I saw a Gross someplace. I don't have it in front of me. But the Gross says that the difference between praise and flattery is from the mouth outside, and praise comes from inside and comes out of the mouth. It's such a brilliant, if you don't feel it, it's not praise, it's flattery. And flattery backfires. If you feel it, it's praise. Second thing on the peer pressure. Encourage your children to take part in positive activities. There is probably no greater, subtle aid to getting them to be with like-minded people, or people that you would actually like them to be with. Their activities, and I don't believe in over-saturating them that they don't have a life, but music, whether athletics, but no, spiritually, and your kids are generally surrounded by other children who share these positive interests. After-school activities are good, they're important. People will, it's a whole different topic of how much is too much, but when your child's friend, and it happens with young children, when your child's friend suggests something inappropriate, you can teach your child to suggest other things to do, which something, and they have other things to do, hopefully, and, but with this activity plan, which is much easier sometimes, suggesting an alternative is much easier than walking away on multiple levels. The third thing, and there's no particular order, excuse me one second. The third thing, which is really important, it sounds so poshish, and it's the things that are poshish are really the difficult things. Listen to your child. Now, this doesn't really seem to be something that needs to be said, but if somebody ever really kept track of how much they talk with their children and how much they listen, even when their children are talking, how much they talk, how quickly they finish their children's sentences, how quickly they jump to conclusions before the child finishes. Children, the goal in raising children is for children to make decisions because they want to do the right thing. That's, and I just want to repeat that because it's important. The goal in raising children is that they should make decisions because they want to do the right thing. That means parents have to help children develop attitudes, responsible attitudes, about important issues. And the best way to do that is to talk to them about important issues. Listen to them compassionately, not judgmentally. When your child is the target, and how many times does this happen with young children? When your child is the target of the bullies or the one being left out or whatever it is, all parents want to jump in like a brave shackle, everybody, to fix the issue. It doesn't always help to protect your child from hurt feelings. Listen to his complaints, act as a supportive sounding board. You can't make the pain disappear necessarily, but you do him a tremendous service by allowing him a safe, non-judgmental place to share their feelings. If you read an article that talks about peer pressure or about a decision somebody made, somebody their age, is not you, the papers and all papers and everything is filled with, the books that they read are filled with decisions that children have to make. And if you're tuned in with them, it's not difficult to ask them, even at the age of 7, 8, 9, what would you have decided in such a situation? What do you think would have been a better alternative? And obviously you want to tell them what would be the better alternative and what you think the person should have done. Listen to them. And your willingness to listen and not lecture tells your child a very loud, subtle message that you respect their opinion. And when you give them valuable practice in expressing contrary opinions and ideas, that becomes money in the bank for them when negative peer pressure arises, because they have the confidence to express themselves. Let me tell you something which we tend to think is not true, and especially as your children will get older, you will be convinced it's not true. But children want to please their parents. They want to be, as, you know, sometimes, listen, I was a teenager that many books can be written about. Okay, but ultimately, what your parents think about you is very important, and it's important to all of us. I just spoke to somebody who is already has a close friend of mine who has grandchildren who are bar mitzvah, and he just recently lost a parent. And I spent a lot of time with him when I went to be Menachem Avil. And it was just myself and him at some point. And he said to me, Zevi, he says, you know what it is? Now, I always knew that no matter what I did, he lost his mother. This one person thought I was always the best in the world. I was always perfect. I was always this. Nobody was as good as me. No, I knew it wasn't true. But it meant so much to me. There's a person who has grandchildren who are bar mitzvah. He says, for the first time in whatever it is, I don't know how many years, whatever he said, I don't remember. He said, I'm alone. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And it's such a lesson about what a parent, what a child, how a child feels about parents. We worry that, and this is the fourth thing that I would say, which is don't back down from your values. We worry that peer pressure will do, will undo all of our efforts to teach children positive values as they get older, starting at 5, 6, 7, maybe even before that, but I don't remember that so much anymore. As they get older, your children are going to test your values. They may hear the message that it's cool to be disrespectful to adults. You know, the knackers, you know, everybody's a tutzach. Okay, your kids are going to try on behaviors and attitudes that are contrary to your values. It's important to remember that your children will look to you for moral guidance, and you must constantly reinforce your values, not only by what you say, but most important by what you do. If you're too preachy to your kids, as they get older, they turn down the volume on the preachiness. Let's say, for example, you overhear your 10-year-old daughter and her friend, not that this would ever happen, but you hear your 10-year-old daughter and her friend making fun of a new classmate. Probably never happens, just was something that I thought maybe and wouldn't apply to anybody. So in front of her friend, this happens so many times. The parent says, what's gotten into you? You used to be such a nice girl. But they're not saying it critically. They don't mean it critically. They, you know, but that's what happens when you talk instead of when you talk without thinking. And the first thing is, don't even talk about it until the two of you are alone. Don't even talk about it. And what you might say is, I was surprised to overhear you speaking so unkindly about the new girl. You're usually so compassionate. It must be hard for her to come to a new school where she doesn't know anybody. I did the same thing. I did it in private. So that took one resentment out of the picture. And I've given them something to live up to. Pasuk in Mishlei says, Al teichach letz, pen yisna echa, pen yisna echa, hecheach lechacham v'yeh v'ucha. So, there are those that learn pshat. Al teichach letz, when you are mechiach somebody, when you give someone mussar, don't call them a letz, a scoffer, a joker, whatever. Pen yisna echa, lest they will come to hate you. Hecheach lechacham, give teichacha to the chacham v'yehuf, and he will love you. And simply we think it means that if you're going to give teichacha to a letz is going to make the pay for the teichacha. He's going to hate you. If you give teichacha to the chacham, he's going to, chacham appreciates teichacha. He wants to shteig more. So that's how we learn simply the pshat and pasuk. But there are those that say pshat and pasuk. I don't remember who it is, but it's something you don't want to forget. It's such a chinuch yisoid. Al teichach letz, when you're mechiach your child, don't say to them, you're a letz, put the child down. Pen yisna echa, the child is going to come to hate you. Hecheach l'chacham, but if you'll be mechiach him, and you'll tell him you're a chacham, v'yavucha, you'll give him something to live up to. It's beneath you, it's something that's beneath your dignity, you have to mean it. But if you really mean it, and you'll be mechiach that way, v'yavucha, your child will love you. The fifth thing is, you know, I think when you're younger, when your children are younger, which would mean you're probably younger as well, I'm not sure how much it applies because I think we naturally know this, but remember this as you get older. Know your children's friends. Here's a simple thing, okay? I'm going to tell you the reality of life today in the technologically advanced society that we live in, and just give you a let's say scenario, not that anyone here would have ever done this or experienced it, but let's just imagine a scenario, the following. I'll show you how a child could not lie and you're clueless, okay? A child is sitting in school. All the schools have rules, they can't have cell phones. It's a gzeira shenet shirir chayla lamed, but everyone has them. You're not allowed to this. Everybody has their conditions. They all have them. For some crazy reason, parents are compelled to give dynamite to their children. But okay, everybody has them. So a text message comes into a child and it's on silent. So nobody knows about it. And it says, meet me at the mall from 7 o'clock. Now, it came from the boys' yeshiva, but who knows? You know, who knows? It's silent. Nobody knows this. Okay, child comes home, finishes homework, and she says, her parents say, where are you going? I'm going to the mall. Where are you going with? Friends. Has not been one lie that was said yet. And the child's at the mall with friends. Nishtagadacht. I mean, what's going to happen is it's a scenario that plays out in any city, any place in the world today on a consistent basis. You know, when we moved to Silver Spring, let me say this the right way. When we moved to Silver Spring, we weren't necessarily comfortable. The options of schooling were limited back in the ancient days. And our boys went away to Baltimore every day on the bus, on the van, whatever. But my daughter had no other alternative, and she was in a local co-ed day school, of which I'd had many legendary battles with them, let's put it that way. But we didn't know we live in a small neighborhood, you don't know everybody. And now for sure it's true that you don't know everybody. And the community wasn't 23 years ago what it is today. So we decided that we were going to let our kids play with anybody who they wanted to. But for every one time they went to someone else's house, they had to be five times at our house with the same person. Just something that we did. It worked out gewaldic. It just happened that we knew the kids that our children were hanging around with, especially when you're dealing with teenagers. If there's a little food in the house, it could become a beis vadla chachamim. You'll notice that teenagers always gravitate to the trough that feeds them the most. You should know that. It's a yisoid, okay? And when, for the price of a little bit of food, you can get to know your children's friends. I'm saying at a young age, you probably know most of your children's friends and their parents, but you'll know who's a positive influence and who isn't. I want to talk about the friends. I say this, I think, in just about every lecture I give that has to do with kids. The one thing that we try to do is we try to control our children's friendships. Everybody. And there's nobody that doesn't try to do it. Anybody who says that they don't try to do it is lying. Okay? There's nobody that doesn't try to do it. And you read all the books and every article you'll see tells you it's a bad thing to do. And they all have their psychological gobbledygook of why it is a bad thing to do. But the real lemmas is, what's the real lemmas of why it's a bad thing to do? And think about it. The one decision that children make as they grow up, a value judgment that's exclusively theirs, is who their friends are. It's just about the only one in our environment that kids sometimes get to make. And when you criticize their friends, you're not criticizing their friends. You're criticizing them. It's taken very personal. And how many times, and maybe you all look too young to have kids who are teenagers, okay? But if some of you were once teenagers that maybe weren't on the straight and narrow, I'm not going to, you know, I don't know, it's not my business. But you know that what happens, it's a consistent scenario in school. Teacher calls in a girl, no, I don't like your friend so much. No, she doesn't say it that subtle. That used to be in the 1960s, that's what he used to say. Okay, but now it's much more subtle. It's, some of the girls that you hang around with, maybe they're not the best for you. I'm not going to say any names. However they say it, you know. And meanwhile, the three friends are outside, and the first thing that they ask is, when the kid comes out of the office, is, what did the teacher say? Nothing. You were in there for 40 minutes of nothing? It's not my office. You're in there for 40 minutes of nothing? So, and that inevitably it comes out. And it's usually a death knell for the teacher. If not, if the kid listens and she drops her friends, so she's fine with one kid and eight kids hate her. If the kid doesn't listen, so nine hate her or whatever it is. Because it's something that once it gets at it, and the other thing, when you criticize your children's friends, it's simple. And I don't care what the age is, mayim gnuvim yim taku. It's just the way it is. Stolen waters are sweet. It's over and over. Chazal is a favorite principle. Now, I know the obvious question that nobody's asking, but that everybody wants to ask. So what do you do? And it's a legitimate question. There's one answer to it. I've never yet found another answer. And the answer takes an extraordinary amount of courage and patience. It does. I don't know another answer, but I know the one that we try to do by controlling their friendships doesn't work. The messages that it gives to our own children, forget about the friends, to our own children is a very difficult one. But the only thing is to keep on building your child and to keep on being positive with your child. As the child stays, there's one of two things that happen. The friend stays with her, and then usually it's not an issue anymore. Or she changes her friends because she just doesn't want to put herself in that environment. Her values change. They become more consistent with your values. But I think that that's something. There's a home field advantage when it comes to your children and friends. Have them in your house as much as possible. You can just imagine what's going to go on tomorrow. Tell her to come here. No, tell her to come here. Well, nobody's going any place. I just ruined socializing and children and water better. Okay. The next one. We can teach our children. We can do it. It takes effort, and it takes wisdom, and it takes sensitivity. Teach your child to foresee situations that may lead to trouble. There's certain things that you know aren't going to be good. There's certain things that you, when you have the gut feeling that it's not right, usually it isn't. An invitation to a place that doesn't have adult supervision, hanging around with kids who do quote-unquote bad things, phrases that kids make, we won't get into trouble, everybody's doing it, it's really not that bad, are usually a tip-off to bad situation. And we should teach our children that it's a tip-off to bad situation. And again, I go back to that, if the relationship is warm and kind, the monitoring of kids' activities comes across as caring, not as intrusion. And it's not, because it's not something that starts right there, b'shas ma'aseh. this is a must. It is a must. And when I speak in front of non-Jews about these things, they all shake their head because this is so posh to them. There has to be some kind of backup plan when your child is in a situation that they can't handle. And there, we have it in our family. There's a code word that we use, that our kids have been taught to use. If they ever feel that they're in a situation that they can't handle, we've told them a certain word to use in their conversation with us that is so benign that their friends won't have any idea, but it's a simon to us to come pick them up right away. They can't handle it. And it mamish, it works. You know, I had a specific word I wanted them to use. My wife thought it was about as subtle as a sledgehammer. Okay. The next thing is the former First Lady, Nancy Reagan, made it very popular. But there is such a concept of just say no, and teaching our children to just say no. Sometimes what's very important as they get older, and it's not like going to sit down one day with your kids on Sunday, you know, May 20th or whatever it is. Okay, today we're going to learn about how to deal with peer pressure. It doesn't work that way. But as situations come up, sometimes it's after a situation, but after a situation, it's investment for the next one is help your children role play. You'll go through a situation and let them put on the peer pressure. You show them how you react to it. You know, when all of this stuff happens and a genuine respect and care and concern exists, it sort of creates a certain psychological autonomy, you know, and we have to teach our children to be assertive, and we don't have to control them. When we control them, we make them susceptible to negative peer pressure. Not that they're trying to break out from us, okay? It's not that they're trying to break away, but we make them susceptible to negative peer pressure because they always need us to respond for them, and they can't respond on their own. And just quickly, because I've gone on longer than I wanted to, there are a number of ways to say no. They can ignore the situation, they can ignore the remark that's made, which is important, teach children not to take the bait. Withdraw from the situation, they can offer an alternative, make an excuse, change the subject, act like they don't take the suggestion to make this trouble seriously, use humor, act shocked by the suggestion. There are different things that we can do. And children, different ways that children see us react to peer pressure that they can then use. Also, there is a way, the ninth thing is to turn peer pressure into something positive. And I've mentioned it before, but when we have a Mila. Because if we could get them, it's not easy, but if we could get them to love doing the right thing, al pi Torah, which is an environment fostered in a home, that kind of God-centered, I want to call it faith, but really a moon be talking, when kids buy into it, and it really creates with them when they know they can daven for siyata d'shmaya to deal with a situation, it means something. And the last thing which I would say in the peer pressure thing is really talk with other parents. especially as your children get older, you'll find out that everybody isn't allowed to stay out all night. You'll find out that everybody is not allowed to go without a seatbelt. You'll find out that everybody does have chores to do around the house. And when your children know these things, you know, they're better equipped to help the exaggerated claims, which most kids exaggerate their autonomy that they have at home. Knowing where kids are, who they're with, what they're doing, and if it's negative behavior, and you know, it needs a lot of seichel. I just want to end with the following. I was told an hour, I think it's exactly 56 minutes since I started, so I want to end on time, which would be a shafiyonim for some of you. But let me just end with the following thing. I'm going to end with a story, because the story is at the foundation of the beginning. We all would love our kids to be bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and have the dreams and aspirations that we've had for them at the beginning. And Amir Tashem, everybody will be zeicha to that. But this is something that requires a tremendous amount of work. But the most effective tool that you have in battling peer pressure is the genuine love that you have for your child. This, I don't know where I found this, because I didn't write it in my notes, because I was rushing a little bit. Okay, but I'll just read a story, because I think the story always has a major impact on me. Sums up everything. And then I'm just going to review the 10 things until you're done. In Glasgow, Scotland, a young lady, a lot like our teens today, got tired of home and the restraints of her parents. The daughter rejected her family's religious lifestyle and said, "I don't want your God, I give up, I'm leaving." She left home deciding to become a woman of the world. Before long, she was dejected and unable to find a job, so she took to the streets. The years passed by, her father died. Her mother grew older and the daughter became more and more entrenched in her way of life. No contact was made between mother and daughter for these many years. The mother, having heard of her daughter's whereabouts, made her way to the Skid Row section of the city in search of her daughter. She stopped at each of the rescue missions with a simple request, "Would you allow me to put up this picture?" It was a picture of the smiling gray-haired mother with a handwritten message at the bottom, "I love you still, come home." Some more months went by and nothing happened. Then one day the daughter wandered into a rescue mission for a meal. She sat absentmindedly listening to the service, all the while letting her eyes wander over to the bulletin board. She saw the picture and thought, "Could that be my mother?" She couldn't wait until the service was over. She stood and went to look. It was her mother, and those were the words. There were those words, "I love you, still come home." As she stood in front of the picture, she wept. It was too good to be true. By this time it was night, but she was so touched by the message that she started walking home. By the time she arrived, it was early in the morning. She was afraid and made her way timidly, not really knowing what to do. As she knocked, the door flew open on its own. She thought someone must have broken into the house. Concerned for her mother's safety, the young woman ran to the bedroom and found her still sleeping. She shook her mother awake and said, it's me, I'm home." The mother couldn't believe her eyes. She wiped her tears and they fell into each other's arms. The daughter said, "I was so worried, the door was open, and I thought someone had broken in." The mother replied gently, "No, dear, from the day you left, that door has never been locked." There's guidance in that story. Let me just review the 10 things. These are not guarantees, but they're things to think about, and life, I believe, will be easier with your children. Number one is helping your child develop self-confidence. Number two, encouraging your child to take part in positive activities. Number three, listening to your child. Number four, don't back down from your values. Number five, knowing your children's friends. Number six, teaching your child to foresee situations that may lead to trouble. Seven, develop a backup plan when your child is in a situation they can't handle. Eight, just say no with assertiveness and autonomy. And nine, turn the peer pressure into something positive, and 10, talk with other parents It was a pleasure to talk to you. Daniela, thank you very much again. And 1 hour and 1 minute. Thank you. Anybody has any questions, be happy to answer any questions after I know you answered. I'm sure we'll be happy.